Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, I have Chris and Jenna Hartman. I love their story. They're both pilots, which is so cool to me. Like, that's something I feel like I could never do. It's so impressive. And they've built a really successful real estate portfolio as well. So I'll let them tell their story. Hey, guys, how are y'all? Thanks for coming.
Good. How are you doing, Avery?
Doing great. You know, just trying to, it's the last few days before Christmas, trying to make sure I've got everybody's stuff and everything lined up, but you know, we're trying to get there. So let's hear about you guys. So tell me about yourselves, your background in the military, what you're doing now for your active income, and then how you got into real estate.
Yep, for sure. So hi everyone, my name is Jenna Hartman. I grew up in New Jersey in a military household where we moved about every 2 years or so.
Yep, and I'm Chris, military brat as well. So how we kind of got started in real estate, we were always looking for ways that we could build wealth. And whenever you search it, Google it, real estate's always the first thing that pops up on how you could retire early. So it's something we were always interested in. I first enlisted in the Air Force out of high school, and a piece of advice I was given that we started taking action on was, if you could buy a house at every base you get assigned at, and then when you leave, turn it into a rental. By the time you get out of your, or you in your military service, you'll have a portfolio that you'll be really proud of, and you'll be able to generate some good wealth by the time you get out of the military.
Oh, they teach you that in the military?
No, that was a mentor of mine. while I was young, they should teach that, because unfortunately, a lot of people don't take advantage of a lot of the neat tools that the military offers to help you begin that real estate journey. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, we went to the Air Force Academy. That's where Jen and I met each other. We majored in business management there. Got selected for pilot training, and we went to Enid, Oklahoma for pilot training, small town. And that's where we took action on that advice that I was given and bought our first property. We house hacked without even knowing we were house hacking. We rented out one of the rooms to Jenna's good friend. We then got selected to fly. I got selected to fly F-16s and Jenna C-17s in South Carolina. We moved there, and then we turned that first property into a long-term rental. When we received that first rental check, that was when we saw the power of real estate, that first check that came in, and we knew that it was going to be a powerful thing for the rest of our lives. That's when we started diving into the podcast, the books, all that stuff, Bigger Pockets. And we just continued to take action on that. We bought another place in South Carolina, lived in it for a year, moved out, and rented that one out. And we knew we wanted to do it at a much faster pace, but we didn't really know how. And that's when we heard your podcast on Bigger Pockets, and you had the same kind of mindset. So you dived into the short-term rentals to generate more cash flow to buy more long-term rentals kind of thought process. And that's when we had the full itch, and we jumped straight into short-term rentals. And we acquired 3 properties in 2 years, and then moved again, got another long-term. And then now most recently, we've been expanding our co-hosting business to generate some more income there.
Okay, awesome. So I got stuck on one thing there that I'm super impressed with. So I don't really know anything, not anything at all, about planes and aircrafts and things. But I do live between 2 Air Force bases where they're always flying back and forth kind of over us. And C-17s, Jenna, those are those really huge planes, right? You flew those? Fly those?
Yeah. So I flew that for 3 years, super large aircraft. It was a lot of fun, but we actually just moved to Mississippi, and now we are trained to be instructors. So I'll fly the T-1, much smaller aircraft. And then Chris is flying the T-38 right now. So, yeah.
Jeez. Man, yeah. Y'all are impressive.
No, it's honestly, we were in the right place at the right time. I always say that if you go to the Air Force Academy, the chances of you becoming a pilot are a lot higher. And I will say that I had no intention of being a pilot when I first went to the Air Force Academy.
Oh, really? They were just like, here, fly this big plane?
Yeah, I get really airsick. So.
Well, that is really cool. And I'm heading to y'all's neck of the woods, I believe, on Saturday.
Nice.
For Christmas. So, This episode of The Short-Term Show is brought to you by The Short-Term Shop. If you're interested in buying a short-term rental in one of the top vacation markets in America, just go to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected with an Agent. If you purchase a home with the shop, you'll have access to all of our client-only benefits, such as training on how to manage your short-term rental. So we'll teach you everything you need to know, from how to set up your Airbnb and Vrbo listings, to how to use the property management software that you'll need to streamline your business, all the way down to helping you source your local boots on the ground, like cleaners, handy people, etc. We've taught thousands of people just like you how to buy and manage their vacation homes from anywhere in the world. So head on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected with an Agent to get started. I do have to mention that we're brokered by eXp or else I get in trouble. We'll see you guys over there. Okay, cool. So you started with long terms. So you use that strategy of buying a house to live in wherever you're stationed and then keeping that as a rental. What made you guys decide, oh, I want to try a short term?
We kind of fell in love with the hospitality part of it. We just, again, started listening to podcasts, educating ourselves with all the resources that are out there to everyone's disposal nowadays. And then we just took action on it and we kind of got our feet wet, if you will, with the long term. So we felt comfortable diving into short terms after doing a little bit of self-study. And we just wanted to do that again because of the more cash flow that came from it and using that to buy the more stable or more passive, it's not fully passive, long-term rentals.
Gotcha. So your system is a little bit like mine in that you have the short terms to kind of buy more long terms that you don't have to mess with as much.
Exactly. I'd also say that we enjoy the short terms more. We like being hands-on. We like being creative. Yeah. We like being able to control it. You know, with the long terms, it's kind of, you let the market, you know, manage your rentals.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. So let's talk about where your short-term rentals are.
So we originally had three. One, our first one that we got in Southwest Florida, we actually ended up turning into a medium term and then most recently to a long term. So as I'm sure you know, the Southwest Florida market has become very saturated and a lot of the insurance costs have increased and all that stuff. But that being said, that was our first one. We got our second one again in Southwest Florida. And then most recently, we decided to diversify because of Hurricane Ian. helped us teach us that we should diversify our real estate just like anybody would in your stock. So most recently, we bought in Western North Carolina market. We used you guys, Short-Term Shop. Shout out to Jay the Viking. He was super awesome.
He is such a character.
Are you able to go axe throwing with? So that was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He took you axe throwing. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's his
thing. Yeah. I think before we even signed the deal, he was like, let's go axe throwing.
Yeah.
Yes. Love him. Okay. So you got Southwest Florida. You got Western North Carolina. What types of properties are they? How big are they? What does that look like?
So our property in Southwest Florida is a two bath. And then the property that we bought in Western North Carolina is a 3-bed, 2.5 bath. So both pretty small, I'd say.
Okay. And I want to drill down on that real fast because I feel like the way the current, you know, scene of short-term rentals is everybody's buying these big mansion things and doing all these crazy things, but you do not have big properties. So I would like to know, is that purposeful or you're just buying what you can afford or, and what kind of income are you seeing on these guys? Cause I'm a big fan of small properties, by the way. I love small properties. I think that they're almost never saturated. So anyway, I'll let you talk.
Yeah, for sure. So I think whenever we look at it, you know, we're always doing a lot of research in the market. We're trying to see what's going to make the most amount of money. And typically you're going to see those larger houses are going to make more money. However, I'm a big proponent for whatever you can afford is what you should buy.
Agree with that for sure.
Like whenever we were looking at Western North Carolina, we did want to buy a bigger place just because we needed to make more money. But the 3-bed, 2.5 bath is what we could afford at that time. We definitely don't want to overstretch ourselves. So that just made sense for us.
Yeah. And the 3-bed, 2-bath has kind of been a sweet spot for us in the Western North Carolina market. We did the research on
you know, how much, what's the occupancy rate versus the income that you can make in that market. And every market, I feel like, is, of course, as you know, is different. But we found that the 3-bed, 2-bath, we could capture those couples, you know, that want a small vacation. And we could still even capture the families, small families with 2 to 3 families. And it's done pretty well for us. That 3-bed, 2-bath in Western North Carolina, we were able to do in the first year, $95,000.
Woo! How much did you pay for that one?
We paid $430,000 for that one. Brought in 95, and we actually missed out on about $4,000 in revenue because of Hurricane Milton. We had had some cancellations, obviously, because of the North Carolina market got impacted.
Wow! So less than $500,000, and you probably, you know, if that hadn't happened, you're looking at like $100,000 a year. And people say you can't find deals anymore.
And that's also at 7.5% interest. So, I mean, pretty high interest rate as well. And it's all about just doing your research, running the numbers, and again, just taking action and taking action on, there's always deals out there that make sense and you just got to find them.
We're just waiting for those interest rates to drop.
Yeah, we're going to refund this.
Yeah, aren't we all? So you guys are probably the second or third people that I've had on the podcast in the past 2 or 3 months that have had really amazing success with having bought in the highest interest rate climate of the past few years. You know, a lot of the naysayers are like, oh, well, yeah, if you bought in the 2% interest rate. I've seen actually more people talk about failing and Airbnb bus and blah, blah, that have the 2% interest rates than the people who have the 7.5% interest rates who bought in the last few years, but have really paid good attention to buying right and managing right. So I love that about you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So let's hear about actually one other thing I wanted to drill down on what you said. So buying what you can afford. I think that people get so hung up on the lists and the gurus and the whatever, and they think, I've got to have this very specific size property and it has to be a 4-bedroom, it has to be a 5-bedroom or what have you. And the perfect size, the best size property for anyone to buy in any market, any vacation rental, I don't care if it's a metro market, suburban market, vacation market, the best size for you is the one that you can afford. And I think that's so, you guys are a really good example of being successful with not overextending yourselves. And, you know, you've got the high interest rates and you're still being successful. So I love that. And I want to talk about too, let's talk about that one in Southwest Florida where you had to convert it to a medium term and then a long term. So I'd like to hear about what were the signs that made you say, oh, maybe I need to do a medium term or, oh, let's just convert this to a long term. Because I'm sure there are some people out there who might be able to relate to that. They're like, I don't know. When do I do this? When do I make this change?
So this property in Southwest Florida, it was like our first true investment property. So I'll start saying we didn't know the things that we know now. And there's a lot of things that we would have done differently. But the place itself has a 2-month minimum, and that's so common for condos around there. Mm-hmm. And the first, what was it, about 2 years, mm-hmm. we were renting it medium term. And the problem was not that we could not buy the demand, but you have to work with the HOA to get tenants in there. So we knew we could work around the 60-day event, but the problem was these nurses and people who are coming for work there, they were ready to move in the next day. Mm-hmm. So we had to reach out to the HOA to get approval and not knocking on the HOA too much and the property management company, but they do things a little bit slower down in Southwest Florida. It takes a little bit of time to get those application approved. So it just started to become like a pain in the butt. And that was kind of like, all right, maybe if we just switch over to a long-term rental, we don't have to worry about the pain of having to reach out to the HOA every time and try to find a tenant that makes the dates work. And also, I'd say it's a matter of making the dates work for the guests. So, you know, you go through a couple months where people just aren't traveling to the area for work anymore. So whenever we realize that we could do better occupying it for a year, making a little bit less money, then we just went ahead and did a long yearly rental. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. I just wanted to touch on that really quick before I ask about co-hosting. So what made you decide to say, okay, I think we want to host for other people?
I would say the biggest thing is the military teaches a lot about systems and processes and having those things in place. And I think that translates really well to real estate. And after, you know, we've been able to successfully do this now going on our fourth year, we've got, you know, our tech stack and automation, and that has really allowed us to be full-time pilots, but also still manage our own places. And again, back to the whole strategy, looking to generate other sources of income to buy more real estate. So again, we're working full-time jobs as pilots, so we can't dedicate as much time to acquiring properties as we would like. So that's why we've kind of ventured into this. We know we've automated this part of our business. So why not try to do this for other folks as well and translate to that to generate some more income to, in turn, hopefully buy more of our own real estate?
Yeah, I'd also say we are huge proponents of self-management. And we try to teach our friends and anybody who asks us how to self-manage. But there are situations where it does make sense for you to have someone there to help you with short-term rentals. You know, a couple of our clients, they just want us to help get them started. And then after they're started and they know how to run it, then they'll just take it over themselves.
Yeah, I agree with that. And even people who think they want to self-manage, sometimes they don't have the personality type for it. I've seen even clients of ours who we've taught everything we know and they just don't implement it. And then they'll hire another one of our clients to host for them. And then their income goes up. So I think there's always going to be the people who just, hey, I want to have a vacation home. I don't want to do any work, but I want it to either like put a dent in its own expenses or pay for itself or maybe make a little cash flow. There's always going to be those people. And I also think that the past few years have the property management industry has really been disrupted. So back when I started, it was only the big giant local property management companies and they did everything wrong. You know, not wrong. It wasn't wrong back in the day, but they weren't optimizing pricing. They weren't using Airbnb and Vrbo. They weren't using automation tools. They were just doing the bare minimum and their properties numbers sucked for that. So I think that, and I used to be so anti-property manager back then, but over the course of time, as people like you guys who are self-managers, who understand how to truly optimize income and not working off of the big old property managers, they're working off of volume. Like they don't care if your property is optimized. Their goal is to have as many properties as possible and make a little bit of money off a lot of properties. Whereas smaller operators like you guys, I think, have really kind of improved at least the choices for people who want to have managers in terms of actually optimizing their property and not optimizing yourself. So I think there's definitely been a big change and there's still a lot of room to run on being a good smaller manager. And now people have the option to do that instead of having to go with one of these big guys who your house is going to get torn up and it's not going to make any money. So I think there's definitely a space in the market for that. So where are your co-host properties?
We have a couple in North Carolina now, and then a couple in Southwest Florida, that same market.
Yeah, the greater Fort Myers area is kind of where the Southwest Florida market is. And then North Carolina as well, kind of more towards Emerald Isle area.
And then we just picked up one in Charleston as well.
So how are you finding these clients if they're not necessarily people that are in the markets that you already have them in?
Yeah, so I would say just being very vocal about what you do. You know, inside of your circle is going to go a long way. The other place that we have gotten a lot of interest on is actually from Airbnb. So they just recently released like a branch. It's called Experience Co-host. And somehow we were on Airbnb a couple months back and they had actually sent us an invite because we were already, you know, a host of our properties. So we got on the Airbnb Experience Co-host list prior to it launching. It was like during their test phase. But it wasn't until they launched where we got a couple of people they reached out to us and they asked us to do it. So that was very lucky. But besides that, it's just been being very vocal about what we do.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing, or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com. If you like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us.
Awesome. Well, so you guys seem to be crushing it in all aspects. So last thing I'm going to ask about is your long-term rentals. So how many of those do we have and where are they?
So for our long-terms, we got one in Enid, Oklahoma. We've got two in South Carolina, and that's it. So just the three long-terms. Well, excuse me, the fourth one now that we converted to a long-term, that one's in Fort Myers area as well.
Okay, so you got four long-terms, two short-terms, and then you manage a handful as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, cool. And so what's the goal next? Your goal is to use the cash flow from not only your own investments, but from your co-hosting business to go buy more properties?
Yep, that's the goal. We've really fallen in love with that Western North Carolina market, just so the numbers make sense. And I think there's a lot of room for value add there. Obviously, it's the other side of the Smokies, so it's not as popular as Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, but I think, you know, there is a lot of room to run there in that market. And I think that's kind of what we're looking to do next as far as our next short-term venture, is to possibly buy another place or two out there and then again start going back out to the long-term. So we really like the Charleston market where we are living at. Obviously, it's a growing area, so there's a lot of demand, and we see more of an equity play long-term for long-term rentals in that market.
Yeah, yeah. So Charleston is an interesting one because they've got a lot of restrictions, right?
Yeah. They do. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably gear more towards the long-term, like buying long-terms in that area versus the short-terms.
So the short-terms in the area, they have to follow all these rules and get approval process. It's all in very specific areas, but you can do it.
Yeah.
So anytime, you know, an owner, or I don't think we are considered buying there at this time, but anytime an owner finds a place, they have to do their due diligence and make sure that it is indeed in a place that they can actually rent or rent a short miles.
Yeah. And that goes with any market. There's places in Gatlinburg that look great that you can't actually short-term rent. There's just like little slivers where they're trying to preserve the prices and just peace of people who actually live there. So in any market, you got to make sure you're doing your due diligence. I was listening to a podcast recently that David Green was on, and he bought a bunch of stuff in Southeast Florida, so across the state from y'all. And he didn't look into anything about what it takes to get a permit. And so he bought like all these properties and then is now mad at the city because they won't give him a permit because he has like unpermitted garage conversions and stuff. And it's like, guys, you need to know not only just the regulations about where you can do it, but if there's a permitting process, what does it take to get that permit? Like, yep. Come on, guys.
Yeah, permits can hurt you real bad.
Yeah. All right. So guys, is there anything about your story that we haven't talked about that you feel like our listeners would benefit from hearing?
I don't know if we hit it home enough, but you can truly manage short-term rentals, long-term rentals from anywhere in the world. It's all about expectation management, automations, and of course, good communication with your team and in my case, my husband here. But you can, seriously, you can do it. If you want to do it, you can do it. If you don't want to do it, go ahead and hire someone else to help you with it. But it's definitely possible to do things even with a busy job.
Yep. And there's so many resources out there. I can't tell you how many hours and hours of podcasts that I've listened to, and utilizing every point of the day that you can, whether it's driving to or from work, even at the gym, educating yourself. I feel like I've gotten an MBA from podcast listening, just, you know, utilizing the time that I can.
Yeah. The age of the podcast is so like, I remember on my commute back in the day, or at least on the subway in New York, it was kind of there weren't a lot of podcasts, and I would just like read my Kindle or something, but all of the things I could have learned had podcasts come earlier when I had to walk everywhere in New York. So, all right, we are to the last three questions of the show. So first question, what advice would you give 20-year-old Chris and Jenna?
So 20-year-old Jenna and Chris, I was a junior at college. So of course, everyone always says five earlier, which is true. But I think I would tell myself to relax a little bit. Things are going to go wrong in real estate. You know, you buy two, three, four properties. Things are going to happen every month or so. That's going to happen. And the quicker that you can relax and understand that it's going to be fine and you're going to make it work, the better off you're going to be.
Yep.
And yeah.
For 20-year-old Chris, I was enlisted in the Air Force at the time. I would say just find more ways to generate income, side hustles. When you're young, dumb, and happy, you don't have as many responsibilities. I wish I would have taken the opportunity to kind of look at more ways to generate some more income, side hustles, and stuff like that.
Yeah, same. I look back on that period of my life, and I'm like, man, it would not have killed you to like put your head down and grind a little bit harder. Yeah. But, you know. All right. Second question. What advice do you have for new investors who are getting started today? So we're at the very end of 2024, weird time in real estate. What's your advice for them?
Yeah, for new investors, I would say we have a lot of friends and family members who've been asking us for quite some time about real estate and how to get started. And every couple of months, they'll text us and say, ask them a question. I would say don't wait. There's no reason to wait. Interest rates they're going to decrease. They're going to decrease. You don't know what's going to happen, but there's always going to be an excuse not to jump into real estate. So if you're interested in it, get started, take action, get going.
Yeah. The advice I would give is, you know, if an individual doesn't have the ability to maybe generate more income, live below your means, save aggressively, and then utilize that money to real estate. And if it's important to you to find a way to build wealth, and if it's really that important for you to get into real estate, then you'll make it happen. And having that money ready to go, because when opportunity knocks, it's too late to prepare.
Yeah, nobody likes that, Chris. Nobody likes to hear you got to work harder and spend less. They want that easy button. So, but it is the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, last question, a little bit more fun. What is y'all's favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
So shout out, Luke Carl. Make sure you were the one who told me to read this book. I truly believe that you have to make sure that you are right, your mind is right, in order to be successful in real estate and anything you do in life. So I will pick the Almanac of Yuval, all about just happiness and generating wealth, and very much a mindset book.
Yeah. And then for me, I'll give a duo because I think it's important to bring these two together. First one's going to be Obsessed or Be Average by Grant Cardone. Super good mindset book. Obviously, being obsessed about whatever it is you're doing, and that translates to real estate. He can be a little aggressive about his mindset in that book, but again, he talks about nobody's going to promote yourself and your business more than yourself, and I think that's super important to understand. And if you want to be successful in real estate, be obsessed about it and give it your all. Again, like I said, he's a little aggressive about it. So the second book I read right after that is Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. And I think that's a good book to read to also kind of bring this humility aspect of being a business entrepreneur mindset there.
All right. Both good ones. Both good ones. Well, guys, thank you so, so much for coming on. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, where can they do that?
Yeah, for sure. So honestly, we're not very good at social media and need to be better at it. So our business account needs to help. But you can find us on Instagram. I am at Jenna Johns, so JenaJohns. And then Chris's handle is at ChrisP_Hartman.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys, so much for coming on, and we'll catch you later.
Thanks, Avery.
Thanks, Avery.